Andrew Foxer's in the studio now. Good morning, Andrew. How are you?
Good morning, Ben. Doing well.
All right. Let's talk about what's going on in life and taxes this morning.
Well, Ben, today we have a couple different stories for our listeners. One is offering some very good news, some other not so great news, but it mainly affects our northeastern states and maybe not so much in North Carolina. But I thought it was a worthwhile story to go through. Let's start with the good news. The IRS on May 20th released their Internal Revenue Service data book. And what this, Ben, is just a collection of stats regarding, you know, how much money is spent, the IRS spends on, you know, collection, et cetera, what the audit rates are with regards to tax returns. And, you know, what I'll say is that it paints a pretty good picture, with regards to audit rates, Ben. It's interesting. Mm-hmm. In 2018, your audit rate is 0.6% for all individual returns. And if you have $500,000 or less of income, Ben, you're looking at an audit rate right there at 0.4%, 0.5%. So again, the odds of your return being selected for correspondence audit or in-person audit is just extremely low. And these numbers are down drastically from 2010 levels, you know, down 47%, regarding audit rates.
Okay, well, does that give us some comfort? Because kind of like a hurricane, it only takes one.
That's right. Yeah, so a little bit of comfort there, but you know, that's exactly right. And what we should all be mindful of, Ben, which is don't let these numbers fool you. Because in the event that your number gets called and you're having to correspond with the IRS in an audit or actually go to their offices for an audit, you know, you have to be able to back up your numbers and you have to be able to have that supporting documentation. So it's one of those things, good that, you know, you may feel some relief there that they're not selecting as many taxpayers. But there again, just make sure the numbers that you're putting on your returns are accurate and that you can back them up with data. Because as we know, Ben, when it comes audit time, it's not about what you can say. It's about what you can prove with regards to substantiation.
Okay. Yes. So you've got to be able to keep all that paperwork, at least the shoebox handy, right? To turn in everything.
That's right. You know, one of the downsides I'll say about the statistics, which we've kind of mentioned about, you know, in our programs in the past is that the customer service with regards to the IRS is declining. You know, the IRS, we mentioned the budget being cut, and, you know, we talked about phone calls kind of wait times just being exorbitant. Trying to get taxpayer advice during non-filing season is virtually non-existent at this point in time. So, you know, that is kind of one of the downsides is the audit levels are going down, but customer service with the IRS is going down as well. So, you know, it is important to have your, you know, advisors, your attorneys, your CPAs, all those individuals that you rely on for your tax advice and don't look much to the IRS to try to get guidance on these types of things.
Yeah, which is a shame because actually, I've only had one experience where I had extended customer service needs through the IRS and it was actually very good. And so I hate to hear that decline.
Yeah. And, you know, always, you know, if you do want to call, you know, my advice is 9 a.m. is a great time when they get fully staffed up, and just, you know, try to make that phone call and hopefully your wait time will be as little as possible, you know, and you'll get the, you know, the right answer, and get good customer service. But it is an issue that, you know, the IRS is trying to address, you know, year after year at this point in time.
Okay.
Our next story is regarding the state and local sales tax deduction, Ben, and mm-hmm. the IRS just released regulations. So let's kind of remind our listeners what happened. When the Tax Cut and Job Act passed, there was a cap of $10,000 on state and local tax payments deductions. So, you know, for instance, if you're paying state and local taxes, if you're paying state and local sales taxes, if you're paying property taxes, you know, all that combined, your cap is going to be $10,000 that you're able to deduct on your federal return. And so, you know, what happened is a lot of these high property tax states, a lot of these high income tax states for that matter in the Northeast, such as New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, they came up with what they called a state and local deduction workaround. And so they said, okay, we got this cap here, so let's figure out how we can give our state individuals some relief. And they said, okay, well, instead of paying state property taxes, we're going to create a state charitable fund. And instead of you paying your property taxes to the state, you can earmark them to go to this state charitable fund. And guess what? That'll allow you to get a charitable deduction on the federal level. And we'll also throw in a state tax credit to help bring your, you know, basically to mitigate the fact that you're no longer going to be able to deduct these state and local taxes that exceed $10,000. And the service, of course, the IRS looked at this, very closely, and they have come back and made a ruling at this point in time through regulations. And what do you think, Ben? You think they're going to let this one fly?
Oh, no. Are you kidding me?
So what they've come up with is they said the charitable deduction that you give to this state-created charity must be reduced by the value of any tax credit that you receive. Now, this makes sense, Ben, because you may recall when we were talking about charitable deductions before and about how it was important to have on that $250 or more charitable contribution that no goods or services were given in exchange for this particular donation. You know, that was the limit there, because if you receive goods or services for your charitable contribution, then it was not that percentage was not deductible. Well, it's the same logic for this, which is if you receive a state tax credit for your charitable deduction, and I'll put that in air quotes, then you're not allowed to deduct that as a charitable tax deduction on your federal tax return. So that's the way that the service interpreted this, is that you're receiving a benefit. And so since you're receiving a benefit, i.e. the state tax credit for paying your property taxes to this state-created charity, then you can't deduct that portion on your federal return. So I think an example is probably pretty good here. So if you were to give, let's say, $10,000, earmark it to this charity, and you received a credit of $6,000, then you'd be looking at only being able to do $4,000 as a charitable deduction on your federal return. So that's kind of the way this works. And the reason I thought it was important for our listeners, while we don't have this in North Carolina right now, one of the issues may have been that the legislature could have been looking to pass something similar to this. In Georgia and in Alabama, they set up a school voucher program where exactly what happened up in New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, where you could earmark, you know, certain tax payments to go to this school voucher program. And it's the same analysis that's here, Ben. If you did that with your property taxes, then you're going to be limited by the amount of the credit that you received for making that payment to that particular state-created charity.
Well, and as far as taking charitable credits or deductions on your federal return, now with the standard deduction so high, that a lot of people don't even – it doesn't even qualify.
Yeah, you know, and we talked about one way to do this, Ben, is to lump deductions together. So we mentioned one year you would try to take the standard deduction, and the next year you may give more to charity to try to get yourself into the itemized category. So that's one way to do it. Another way to do it is there's a popular new way to make charitable contributions to what's called donor advised funds, which is where you make a charitable contribution where they can spread the money out over time, because a lot of people are wary about giving, you know, let's say you give a boatload in one year, but then you don't give anything in the next year. You know, is that fair to the charity? You know, that's a problem. So these donor advised funds are popping up to allow you to make the contribution, but then the advisor of that fund divvies the money out, you know, kind of on a easy basis. It's not one of those things where there's a lump sum that's given. They just dole the money out. So these are going to become more popular strategies, especially for those that are charitable in nature, but want to get their tax break for making these charitable contributions.
Well, I would imagine that goes alongside the charitable remainder trust idea too.
Exactly. Yeah. It's very similar in that regard, but you know, it is interesting, you know, the states that have come out now, and, you know, obviously New York, the governor is not happy at all and is claiming he's gonna fight this one all the way to the Supreme Court.
The money that went into that new charity, where did that go?
What's that?
The money that they, you know, they said instead of paying property tax, paying to this charitable fund, where did that money go?
Yeah, so that's a good, you know, good point. Each one of these states just set up this charitable organization that again would decide, I guess, where to send the money, you know, and if you bought into it as a taxpayer, you know, you're going to get your state tax credit, but you're not going to really get any relief on the federal side.
Okay. All right. Well, again, it does sound like, I mean, the IRS is actually pretty consistent there with their ruling.
Exactly. Very consistent with regards to if you receive something in exchange for a charitable donation, that portion's not going to be deductible.
You know, it kind of, it's funny because it goes back to we're bouncing charities around and using them now instead of the idea of, well, it's a good thing to do. You know?
Yeah.
We have to have another angle.
That's right, man.
Yeah. All right. Look, if you want to find out more about life and taxes, you want to find out how to take care of any tax issues you have, you can email Andrew A. Foster at HarvellandCollins.com and go to their website, HarvellandCollins.com, to listen to past shows, too. And we'll see you next week on Life and Taxes with Andrew Foster.